Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with today's key and critical arguments before the Supreme Court, which go to the heart of the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. Dahlia Lithwick, a contributing editor at Newsweek and a senior editor at Slate, who covers the Supreme Court, joins us. She was in the Supreme Court today, and we will discuss what many court watchers are describing as a disastrous day for President Obama and supporters and beneficiaries of his health care reform law. Then we'll look into the Pope's visit to Cuba, where he is now meeting with Raul Castro and may or may not meet with Raul's brother Fidel. Joining us is a former political analyst with the Cuban government, Arturo López Levy, and a professor of Hispanic Studies, Marta Hernandez Salvan. We will discuss the gulf between the Pope's call for an open society in Cuba and a Cuban government's official's statement that there will be no political reform in Cuba. Then finally, we will speak with Brendan Fisher, a law fellow with the Center for Media and Democracy, who have been at the forefront in exposing ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. We will examine the big brand corporate powers behind ALEC, who have had hundreds of model bills passed in state legislatures across the country, including the controversial Stand Your Ground law in Florida. Joining us now is Dahlia Lithwick, who is a contributing editor at Newsweek and a senior editor at Slate, where she specializes in covering the Supreme Court and judicial issues. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dahlia Lithwick.
Thank you, Ian. Thanks for having me.
And you're in the court today, and I must say, court watchers the sky is falling. Disaster, wipeout, the president's Affordable Care Act in danger, in dire jeopardy. What were you left with today?
I'm not sure I was quite that disheartened. It was not, by any stretch, a good day for the Affordable Care Act. I think that it was very, very clear early in the argument that this was going to divide on partisan lines. The four liberals on the court seemed overwhelmingly to support it. The four most conservative justices on the court seemed quite opposed to it, surprisingly in some cases. And that left everybody's eyes on Justice Anthony Kennedy, who is, you know, often the swing voter in these cases. And he certainly looked, at least for the first hour of this two-hour argument, as though he had real serious problems with the individual mandate. And that's obviously the heart and soul of this piece of legislation. If the individual mandate goes down, it all comes down. And Kennedy really made noises very early on in the argument that he thought, for instance, just right at the very beginning, he said, quote, assume this law is unprecedented, which is never a thing that you want to hear, and said several times that he thought that the government had sort of created regulation in order to created commerce in order to regulate commerce. Just throughout the first hour looked as though he was very doubtful about the mandate. But I will say that I think in the second hour of oral argument, when the challengers to the ACA stepped forward, he was quite interested in questioning them, and also I think at the very end certainly suggested that he might at least be contemplating the argument that is, again, critical in this case, that regulating the health insurance market is really different from regulating other markets. It's in fact necessary that the government do it. So I guess my takeaway is it was certainly not a good day for Obamacare. I'm not sure it was quite the unmitigated disaster we're hearing, and I think it's really important also to remember that what you see at oral argument is never the whole story.
So in other words, because Paul Clement, arguing for the 26 states against the Affordable Care Act, apparently did well, and the Solicitor General, Donald Varelli, arguing for the Obama administration, apparently didn't do so well, that's not the deciding factor. It's not a popularity contest between who does the best lawyering, I presume. I mean, they're going to spend a few months, right? It's not coming out till June.
Right. And I think, you know, an issue of this magnitude, Ian, I mean, you know, this is the court presumably poised to strike down the president's and Congress's signature health care reform. I don't think you do that on the strengths or weaknesses of the relative argument. That said, I thought the enthusiasm with which they beat up on Don Verrilli, the Solicitor General, certainly suggests that there's an awful lot of votes to strike this down. And, you know, it's worth pointing out that an awful lot of court watchers, across the ideological spectrum, came into this case absolutely sure this thing was going to be upheld by an 8-1 or 7-2 margin.
Well, when initially these lawsuits were lodged, the general consensus was they were frivolous. It's amazing to see how far they've come. And I suppose in the back of your mind, you have to say, well, even though this would be a radical act on the part of the Supreme Court, they recently took a radical act in Citizens United. So they're capable of nasty surprises.
Well, I think that cuts both ways. I think it's certainly true. Anybody who remembers Bush v. Gore knows that the court can hand down a searing 5-4 ideological opinion if the need arises. But I do think that the blowback, both from Bush v. Gore and from Citizens United, makes the court a little bit leery about doing it again. I think that, you know, there's always a tension in the court's view of how far it can really push its own legitimacy and credibility in the public eye. And this case is one of those cases where it seems to me there's going to be a lot of soul searching, at least, I think, you know, clearly, Anthony Kennedy and maybe the Chief Justice, it looks to me, are really grappling not with the sort of constitutional merits, but also the political ramifications of saying we are not an activist court, we are a humble minimalist court, but we are going to strike down this massive, massive piece of legislation.
It seems strange to me that that the defenders have to explain to the justices why allowing the government to compel individuals to buy insurance did not mean that the government could make individuals buy anything, in which case broccoli was offered up as an example. I mean, $1 in $6 in the U.S. economy is spent on health care. I'm surprised that it in fact, Verrilli had to be coached. He had to be coached yesterday by Breyer and again today by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who had to point out that, just quoting what she said, "I thought what was unique about this is it's not my choice whether I want to buy a product to keep me healthy, but the cost that I am forcing on other people if they don't buy the product sooner rather than later." And that gets to the heart of the defense, surely, that this is about a pool. And if everybody joins the pool, then it works. If people don't join the pool, it doesn't work.
Again, in fairness, I don't know that she was coaching Verrilli. I think she was trying to restate the argument he was struggling to make crisply. But I do think it is clear that the opponents of the Affordable Care Act predicated their big, big argument today on two different premises. One is that this is regulating inactivity, that for the first time ever, Congress is forcing people to purchase something that they don't want and they don't need. And the argument that Ginsburg was offering, the argument that Verrilli was offering, the argument on which the entire healthcare bill rests, is that the choice to not purchase health insurance isn't like the choice to not purchase broccoli or not purchase a car, because someday everybody will need health care. And her point was, it's all very well and good to say you're making a choice to do nothing, but you are in fact making a choice to shift the cost for your someday needed health care onto everyone else. And that's this argument that the healthcare market is unique. It's not like choosing not to buy a car. It's not like choosing not to buy broccoli. And moreover, and several of the justices invoke this idea of, you know, the government can't force you to purchase a car. But of course, the government doesn't then provide you with a free car at the end of the day, which is exactly what they do with healthcare. And one of the things that was interesting that arose several times today is that there is a law in this country that says that you cannot turn people away from the emergency room just because they don't have health insurance. And that kind of was flipped by Justices Scalia and by several of the justices to imply that, well, Congress has created this problem by saying you can't turn away any comers to the ER, therefore Congress can't create this as a fix. The implication, I think, being, Ian, that maybe that law is a bad law, this just poleaxed Don Verrilli, the Solicitor General, who said, we have a moral consensus in this country that we don't turn people away when they don't have health care. But I have to say, there were several justices who really do think that's the cause of the problem.
Well, isn't that pretty extraordinary that even that modest introduction of reality or morality into something that is so deeply at the core of our society. I mean, I guess none of the arguments about the need for healthcare are allowed in this kind of abstract argument. I mean, here we have we're living in a country we're the first in spending with some of the worst outcomes. We're the first in obesity. We're the 25th in preventing death from heart disease, 27th in life expectancy, 29th in the number of practicing doctors, 31st in the availability of healthcare coverage, and 31st in infant mortality. I guess that's a separate argument, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, certainly don't think that that argument wasn't made. I think Sonia Sotomayor did try to talk very forcefully about we live in a modern world, we live in a modern economy, there is a need for this. Justice Breyer was as eloquent as I've ever heard him today. Each of the justices on the left side of the court, I think, tried to make the point that you can't just opt out. You can't opt out. This isn't a world in which we all just take care of ourselves and hope for the best. But it was really, it was very, very intriguing to see it come back again and again. Ian, I counted 8 references to broccoli at the argument today, and that was meant to sort of be a talking point or a bumper sticker, but it's kind of turned into doctrine that somehow if the government can force you to purchase health insurance, forcing you to join a gym, says Justice Scalia, forcing you to purchase a cell phone, says Chief Justice John Roberts, or forcing you to buy broccoli, say both Scalia and Roberts, is the next stop. And it seems to be an argument about slippery slopes, but it's not an argument about why there was this urgent, urgent need. Stephen Breyer kept saying millions and millions of people uninsured that the rest of us pay for, all of our premiums jacked up. The only way to fix it was what happened, and yet that seemed just a preposterous argument today.
Well, I'm mystified, though, Dahlia Lithwick, because surely the government has been able to force people. For example, they've conscripted people into the military, which is another way of saying they could force you to die. But they're arguing now against people who are trying to have us live better and longer.
Well, I think there are 2 responses that the opponents of the ACA would make. One is, yes, you can be forced to do jury duty. Yes, you can be forced to register for the draft. Yes, you can be forced to be a census taker. But those are all things that are laid out in the Constitution as obligations intended to your citizenship. And that's quite different, they say again, and this brings us to the second thing, from being forced to buy something. So that's the line that they draw. I think there's some rumble that there was something called the Militia Act in the George Washington era, in which everyone was forced to purchase a gun. And so there's certainly been some mumbling on the other side of the aisle that that would have been the best analogy, that people have been forced to purchase things in this country for a long time. But that wasn't mentioned today. It hasn't gotten a lot of traction. I think the basic point is, and Justice Ginsburg made this argument today, we had this fight over Social Security, we had this fight over the minimum wage, we have had this fight every time a massive, sweeping piece of social legislation has passed, and yet it's always been deemed to be within the boundaries of what interstate commerce can be regulated by Congress. So today we're having this fight, and it actually looks as though the line has been drawn in a place that nobody expected it to be drawn.
Well, Dahlia Lithwick, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Dahlia Lithwick, who is a contributing editor at Newsweek and a senior editor at Slate, where she specializes in covering the Supreme Court and judicial issues. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the Pope's visit to Cuba. Here come the